Hello, I'm John Dennis. It's Wednesday, October the 8th. This is a special edition of Guardian Daily, focusing on the government's £50 billion rescue plan for British banks. I'm joined on this special edition of Guardian Daily by Niels Prattley, The Guardian's financial editor, Deborah Hargreaves, The Guardian's business editor, and Aditya Chakraborty, our economics leader writer.
We decided we had to do more than provide liquidity or buy up assets, as in the American programme, and when we have to meet immediate and long-term challenges, no one measure alone will be sufficient.
Today, Gordon Brown has moved to shore up Britain's banks with a £50 billion scheme to part nationalise the banks. He hopes that it will bring stability to the financial sector. But Niels, £50 billion's not the end of the story, is it?
£50 billion is the start of it. There's also up to £250 billion the government's going to guarantee in the form of wholesale funding. This is money aimed at the sort of the medium-term market, the three-year market. This is the stuff that's been in shortest supply, and a government guarantee on that should, it hopes, get that market moving and sort of filter down to businesses and consumers. There's also, third element is the special liquidity scheme that is already in place by which banks can swap assets for treasury bills. That has been extended from about $100 billion up to $200 billion. So you can add it all up and get to a figure of either $450 or $500 billion.
Aditya, that's a lot of taxpayers' money. What are we supposed to get in return?
Well, we will be getting shares in the banks that we give capital to, with that will come dividends, and Chancellor promises some kind of interest rate from these banks. So effectively, with all, whether you bank with Royal Bank of Scotland or Barclays, now effectively we're all banking with all of the big banks, and we'll be getting interest rates from them. But we'll also have an equity stake in these banks, and we've made investment. Effectively, we've made a big public investment, and the sort of the big gamble is whether that will help these banks or whether it will be investment that goes pretty badly wrong.
Deborah, I mean, Brown has said that it will be comprehensive and far-reaching. Is it enough?
Well, there's a big question over whether it's enough, and the details are still not entirely clear. In terms of what we get for it, I think we'd want a little bit more than we have already heard. We'd want some sort of curb on excessive lending by these banks and some curb on excessive executive pay, which the government has already promised, but without any details. One thing that the government hasn't done as part of this is issue a guarantee for all bank deposits. And that's something, obviously, which has been done by other countries. I think the government will say that that guarantee is implicit in what they've done for the banks. But I think it needs to be made explicit because people are very worried about their money and very worried about their savings. So I think the government hasn't quite gone far enough. It may have to go even further. The stock market has already fallen on the back of this. And I think that we are getting into something that we don't necessarily see the end to. I mean, don't you think, Niels? I mean, we could end up having to pay a lot more towards these banks.
Well, it's possible because, I mean, this structure is very different from the American one. The so-called toxic assets are being left on banks' balance sheets in the British scheme. If the value of those assets deteriorate further, it is quite possible to imagine that further capital would have to be put in. I mean, I think in terms of sort of loose ends here, I think, one of the things that's not clear at all from today's statement is the protection for the taxpayer in the form of the price that's going to attach to some of these things. There's quite a lot of sort of woolly wording in this. We don't know the coupon or the rate of interest that it's going to attach to some of these preference shares. The taxpayer needs to know that at some point. I think the figure will emerge, but it would be nice to know it on day one. I think the fact that it's not there indicates how quickly this was put together. I mean, it was a scramble last night.
Deborah, I mean, if the taxpayer doesn't get its money back, we'll be paying for this for years.
Yes, we will. We could well be paying for this for a generation. I mean, you saw in Sweden, they did a similar thing about 15 years ago for their banks. And actually, the government has made some money out of that in terms of buying, selling the stakes again in the open market and in getting interest payments from the banks. It depends very much on how quickly these banks can rebuild their businesses and rebuild their capital bases. If they don't build their businesses quickly enough, the taxpayer could end up being in there for the long term. And we all all could end up paying for this. So far, it's been estimated at £1,400 per person. We could end up paying a lot more for a lot longer.
But Aditya, this might make the UK a good place to do business.
I think if I could just sort of defend the plan for a couple of minutes, obviously Deborah's got some really good points. There is a huge risk attached to this. But if you compare this grand plan to the other grand plan that's been knocking around, which is the one that we've seen in America to bail out banks and Wall Street, well, this one at least admits that capital, shortage of capital, is a problem for these banks. And it says if the government's going to give you capital, then taxpayers should get some kind of shares in return, rather than saying we'll just take all the crap debt from you and, you know, you can go off and go back to normal. I mean, there is a question to be asked about whether we might not also think about what we do about all these bad assets that are hanging around on these banks' balance sheets. But certainly, at least the principle of that seems to be right. I also think that the consequences of not acting this week would have been far, far graver than the possible consequences to the taxpayer if this, of paying back extra taxes or having a squeeze in public spending. I agree that is an issue. On the other hand, as an economist, you could say that if you've got a lot of domestic debt, one thing you can do is have a big run of inflation, and that reduces the debt that the government's got.
I think the Bank of England shouldn't cut interest rates then.
Oh, and the Bank of England should. No, that would lead to the Bank of England cutting interest rates and having a kind of reflation in the economy, which I think we're going to be talking about more and more.
Niels?
I think potentially, you know, further down the line, there is a questions to be asked about the tension between the government's ambition to ensure financial stability and the Bank of England's remit of primarily fighting inflation, because those two ambitions could come into conflict at some point. But I mean, going back to Aditya's point, I think he's absolutely right. This plan is a good plan. I think it's a better plan than the Paulson plan. I think it's got a reasonable chance of working.
Is it more money than the Paulson plan?
For the size of the economy, it is, yes. But I mean, the Paulson plan, everybody talks about $700 billion. But I mean, ultimately, we don't really know what the cost is, because on the American scheme, you know, so much depends upon the price at which those assets are towed away. So $700 billion is just the figure that's bandied about. It could end up being even more. There is, in that sense, more certainty about the cost of the British plan.
I agree that we had to do something, but it's quite interesting that our readers on the website are quite negative about it, and they're saying that the government didn't do this for the miners, it didn't do it for Rover, it was always held back from bailing out companies in difficulty, and yet when the banks are in problems, it has to do something. I mean, that is the interconnected nature of our financial system. It couldn't leave the banks to fend for themselves, but it does leave you with a feeling that it's not quite fair.
Well, if you put yourself in this situation, a widget maker goes bust. If a widget maker goes bust, there's a few problems for its customers and quite a few problems for its business partners, but no one else gets hurt. If a bank goes bust, well, that is essentially a big source, a sort of a hub of money in the economy that's just gone under. And that's banks just have a special place in our economy. It is galling to see all this money go to people who you would assume actually aren't that hard up. And it is galling to see businesses be rewarded for behaving badly in the past. But we are where we are, and the consequences of not rescuing banks are far more serious than the consequences. I mean,
it's tempting as a lefty to sort of say, oh, it's the government capitalist system bailing out the banks. But, I mean, it is a big ideological shift for the government to step in like this, isn't it?
Put yourself in the position of Gordon Brown. You're a late middle-aged man. You've spent half your life not talking about tax and spend, and definitely not using words like nationalisation. All of a sudden, in the past few months, you've had to use the N-word, and now you've got the situation where not only has he bought up a couple of small high street banks, in fact, one bank which pretty much existed only on the internet, Northern Rock, now he's taken big stakes in a bunch of really, really big banks. So he's crossed the kind of ideological Rubicon. Where you could criticise him as a lefty is actually on the sort of points that Deborah was making a few minutes ago. What is lacking from this plan is a kind of vision of doing more than just fixing banks. What do you want these banks to do when you've restored them some kind of health? What do you want them to do about repossessions? Deborah's point is absolutely right. What are you going to do to protect savers? You know, you, as a government, you need public support to push things like this through. Surely one easy way of doing that seems to say to savers, well, we've got your, you know, we've got you covered as well. What are you going to do in the future with your equity stake? Are you going to do it to have some kind of sort of use it as a point of asking these banks to behave more responsibly or to direct investments towards projects that you think are important? I mean, there is, as well as this kind of market failure that we've just been through, a financial market failure, there's a much bigger one. It's climate change. I mean, that's been described as the biggest market failure humanity's ever seen. And one of the things the government ought to be doing is using its stake in these banks to direct its funding towards sort of green technology projects.
Well, as you all know, I have a very apocalyptic view of climate change and social order. And I think we are heading into a very, very difficult period for the world economy. I mean, we have lived through a wonderful, wealthy period where we've never had to worry about where our food's coming up from or where our, even to a lesser extent, where our money's coming from. But there have been massive periods through history where money, food and energy have been extremely short. And our grandparents can remember that, can remember very long periods of almost starvation. And I think we'd be facing that again with global warming and with the breakdown of social order that could cause. And I think our children will be living a very different life from the one we live now.
Niels, we're not quite at the point of apocalypse yet. I mean, what do the rest of the world's economies now have to do? Will they have to follow Britain and do something similar?
Yeah, well, there was a flash on Reuters just a while back saying that the Italians are already talking about this as a model for recapitalising their banks. Clearly, these sort of rescues or recapitalisations of banks work better if they are coordinated, you know, across the Eurozone and across you know, the G7 countries and coordinated globally. In the absence of such meetings and such coordination, I think the government here had no choice but to act today, really, because the markets yesterday were showing real signs of panic. You know, you saw HBOS shares and Royal Bank of Scotland shares down 40%. Mm-hmm. There was a real danger that a run developed on those banks, and that you know, they were brought to their knees before the government could do anything. So this sort of intervention has come in the nick of time. I mean, you could argue that it's probably come too late, and this should have been done a week ago or a month ago. But, you know, the government had no choice but to do this.
Niels, Deborah, Aditya, many thanks for joining us. And don't forget, there's full coverage of response to the government's $50 billion bailout plan today at guardian.co.uk/business. My name's John Dennis. Thanks for joining us.